Thought Press Network.
A big thanks to all our sponsors. Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento is a subscription service that brings a box of comics to your door every month. Check out our website, thetalkinggeekpod.com. Click the link, subscribe, and wait for your comics to hit the mailbox.
C-R-I-T.
Die!
Welcome to another edition of Crit or Die.
Crit or Die, motherfucker, boom!
Bears Love Gaming, how you guys doing today? Hello, Pedro, how you doing?
Hi, Kenny, you beautiful man on the other side of this table here.
I'm just so excited today.
We're thrilled because, I mean, we are not alone. It's not just us screaming at each other for an hour and a half.
I know, right? Usually it's just two bears, but actually a third one just walked in.
Oh, a third bear rolling on in the house here.
Wild Pokemon has appeared.
Oh, a Poke Bear has showed up.
All right, that person that you're hearing is actually Will Cabrera. Say hello, Will.
Hello, guys.
Will Cabrera is a close friend of ours. Not only that, he also is a game designer. So,
woo! Yeah, getting on the other side. Now, we talked a lot about our thoughts about how gaming works, but tell us a little bit about yourself and what your history in gaming.
Wow. It's funny. I started much how you guys started with Magic back in you know, the times we don't talk about. The Dark Ages.
back when the cards looked all weird and shit.
Yeah.
They're all like washed out.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back instance, just sorceries.
Oh. Yeah. Oh yeah.
No, we had interrupts back then.
Yeah, we did. To date myself, I'll say that I played Alpha and Beta.
Holy shit.
I still have some Alpha cards. There was a gaming store near my house called the Gila Monster. And so I used to spend countless days there after doing my homework because I had a strict, you know, Hispanic mother.
Yes, we understand.
Yeah, we are familiar with those.
You sympathize.
Yes, we know.
And then I looked up one day and I saw this blue cover book with Darth Vader on it. And I go, this has to be mine.
Oh, of course.
And it was the Star Wars RPG, which was done by West End Games.
I know exactly which cover you're talking about. Yeah. I've seen that cover before.
Yeah. It is the only Star Wars game that I will ever play willingly because it is the best Star Wars game there is.
So wait, is that the only that's the only Star Wars game you would actually pick up? As far as tabletop?
If somebody invited me to their game, they're like, oh, I want to run a Star Wars game. My first question is West End or garbage?
Wow.
So not even
so
like...
Everything else is just off even the fucking
everything,
table.
Everything else.
Not even like the TIE Fighter game with
I'll play that.
Talk about straight rolling.
Okay. I'm talking about like straight dice rolling.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. Okay, so you started with Star Wars. So what's your progression after Star Wars? Like where you started
I didn't grow up like a typical D&D gamer where you start with D&D and then you branch out. Like I went far into the future and then I came back.
Yeah.
And then I went even further back because I went from Star Wars to... Vampire, the Dark Age, Vampire, the Masquerade.
Oh,
very
wow!
Nice.
So you didn't touch D&D for a while.
D&D.
You went Star Wars, and you were like, okay, let's get even fucking crazier.
Yeah,
let's go with Vampire.
Let's go fucking nuts.
Yeah, man. That's more of a theater thespian's dream right there. Vampire, the Masquerade.
Oh yeah, vampires.
You're focusing
all
more on the role play. Yeah, on the theatrics.
Yeah. And you know, my favorite story is I pick up the book, and I'm with a friend of mine, and you know, I'm talking to him about like I'm flipping through it, so I'm just like not even reading the mechanics yet, and I go, oh man, they have blood points. That's their resource. And he goes, how do you get blood points back? And I stop. And I look at him. And there's a quiet, 2 minutes of silence. And then he's like...
2 full minutes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're kind of vampires. It's literally what they do.
How do you think we get them back?
Okay, so...
So from there, I went and got the rest of the World of Darkness books. You know, Mage was a big influence on me. Werewolf was huge.
Werewolf Apocalypse?
Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dabbled in a little bit of Changeling. Not gonna lie.
I've heard good things about Changeling. I've heard... I've also played this game that is a D10 system called All Flesh Must Be Eaten.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's also more of a role play. It's more of just acting out a scene in a movie as opposed to rolling to determine. Like, you still roll to determine whether or not, but it's not
that strongly based on.
It's more binary. It's more like success or fail versus.
Yeah, it's more like, okay, you wrote, like, it's built in a way where if your character is meant to do that, it's going to do that. Unless you're horrible.
Unless you fuck it up real bad.
Unless you're horrible.
Yeah, it's like, oh, don't try this again.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I got to play, finally, after all of that shenanigans, I got into AD&D.
Nice.
Second edition.
Second edition.
So tell me more about Shenanigans. Which edition of Shenanigans did you start with?
Oh, my God. Shenanigans was all over the place. Like, I got Shenanigans Light, which is Big Eye, Small Mouth.
Yeah.
And then I got Heavy Shenanigans.
That's all D6s. That doesn't even go up to a D10 system.
No. Then I got into Heavy Shenanigans, which is GURPS.
Ooh. Ooh, wow. Oh, that is Heavy Shenanigans.
I was like, what do you want to make? You got rules
everything.
For that.
I want it all.
Yeah, I want to make a vampire pirate ghost. You got it.
Done.
Nice.
Here's 3 books. Go to town.
That sounds like Munchkin. That's what it sounds like.
It is. Like, really, GURPS, it lived up to its name, which is Generic Universal Role-Playing System.
Wow. It's amazing how back then, even in the 90s, the late 90s, it was still very few and far between when it came to role-playing games, tabletop games. And now, the surge that I see from so many, especially with the help of those GrowFund campaigns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would hazard to say, just doing, like, the Pathfinder system feels like it's designed to be like, okay, all of you people that for so long you wanted to make your own campaigns, well, now here's a skeleton, flesh it out.
Yeah.
Put it out there. Do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I got to play AD&D for a month, literally, before 3rd edition came out. So I was like, I don't know how to get my Thago. And it's like, it doesn't matter anymore here.
don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
So you went from like the weird van cover art into something like a little more like transitioning right
what,
there.
What a great way to point it out. Van cover
art. It looks
art.
Like
that's
van
really
cover
what
art.
It is. That's it is. Really what it is.
Our current DM has an original AD&D screen, and I'm like, I have seen this. Like, there should be like a fucking streaming unicorn with this dragon here. Like, it's that level. It's in between, like, if you've ever seen like cheesy sci-fi cover art, it's not even that. It's like proto 60s and 70s fantasy art.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's like the transitioning period into Lisa Frank.
No, it's in between Lisa Frank and Luis Royo.
Yeah,
just with less titties. Like.
Yeah.
No, because we talked about it in the first episode that like I watched AD&D. I didn't play it until I was older, but it was because of my brother Duke playing that game and me seeing it that I ended up picking up Heroes Quest, which is what really threw me into playing those tabletop games. And thing is that I played so many horrible ones that I can't remember.
Yeah.
Some really bad ones.
I have a bookshelf of just nothing but bad games.
Oh, you got to give us at least one name or give us a couple of names that you can think of.
Oof.
I mean, you know, sorry for anybody that enjoys these games.
I hate to tell you this, but sometimes.
Sometimes bad games happen
sometimes.
To good players.
It happens.
Earthdawn was one that looked really interesting, but was just so convoluted that I was like, what am I even doing here?
Okay, so what makes the difference between a good game and a bad game for you in terms of...
I think as far as like tabletop RPGs, I think character development has to be the biggest draw as far as what to give a player and a DM at the same time.
You say like a balance of power between the two of them?
Kind of, not that, not anything to do mechanically. It's just like the more options a player has, the more storyline a DM can write.
Right.
So if somebody's like, oh, I want to play, you know, a vampire pirate ghost, the DM doesn't have to like rack his brain to be like,
how can I make this work?
There are no ghosts in my game. How did you come about?
Okay, yeah. So jumping a little bit now to current D&D with 5th edition.
5th edition.
A lot of people have been saying that it brings more storytelling ability back to the game in general versus some of the more mechanical stuff with 4th edition. Mm-hmm. Is that how you feel also? Do you feel that you have more power as a player in 5th edition?
I think, yeah, for sure. I mean, I got to play in the Adventure League for a little bit when Out of the Abyss came out, which is, I think, 2 chapters ago, because they're just ending Curse of Strahd right now. So I got to play their version of D&D. Like, and when I say their, I mean WotC, which is Wizards of the Coast. So I got to play, you know, their rules, their caps, their glass ceilings, which is like you can't roll for anything. You know, there's no looting corpses because you don't need to worry about that. Here's some downtime. Here's gold and XP at the end of each session. And it wasn't a chore. Like, I played a living campaign back in 3.5, and it felt like I was at a job.
Okay? Living campaign.
Living campaign being the campaigns that they put out where the storyline, depending on how many players succeed or fail, like, that affects the storyline of the world. So, right. Like, Living Greyhawk campaigns, it'd say, like, 60% of the groups fail a certain storyline. It affects the Greyhawk storyline going forward with the next supplements and things like that.
Right. Yeah, like White Wolf and with Vampire, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the Cities by Night and such, and events like, who was the Samuel Haig, I think, is the super OP guy. But as far as like fifth edition is concerned for D&D, I think there's so much more that a player can do compared to all the other campaigns. Like before, it was like, oh, I want to be a brewer. And the DM would be like, that's nice. Here, put some points into craft brewery or profession brewery. and it was like, that's adorable. Go brew something. But in 5th edition, it's like the tools emphasis is one of those things where the DM can really make the character shine. Because it's like if you take the brewing, what's it called? Yeah, profession. You get to add your proficiency bonus to your brewery, one. And two, it's one of those things where it's like it's now part of your character. Where before it took up space and you had to put points into it, now it's there, it's always there, and you don't have to worry about it. You know, if it comes up, it comes up. If it doesn't, you know, you can always say that you brewed something in the past.
Yeah, you find some way to fold that into onto your own personal ongoing narrative.
Right,
yeah.
Like, it's because 4th edition is mostly combat. That's combat-oriented. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it before in and on podcasts about the fact that it's pretty much WoW on paper.
Yeah.
So 5th edition does balance it out now where it's more of you want these characters to develop. You want it to be more of a role-playing aspect. There is fighting, obviously. There is mathematics with the dice coming into play and certain things you would want to do.
Yeah.
But that's more to give him more of that chance.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point of having the dice is to see the chance. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like a friend of mine just started running Curse of Strahd for us because I haven't been able to play through it. And so I decided to make a half-orc fighter. You know, I have his track laid out where I want to go 5 levels of fighter and then pick up 3 levels of paladin and then come back to fighter. And so we're running through the intro campaign called the Death House, which, you know, as a D&D player, you never want to go anywhere near.
Anything called the Death House.
Called the Death House.
That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah, it's
not fun for anybody.
Oh, the first chapter is called the Death House. It's like, why are we playing?
Like, okay, so this is the last chapter also?
This is the last. And it almost was because I got attacked by an animated broom. That crit me.
Wait, oh, wow. A broom critted you?
A broom crit me. Because in 5th edition, there's no rolling for confirmation. It's like 20s is crit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So suck it up. So I'm walking through the house and we come into the room and I'm the first one in the rooms. I'm like, I'm opening doors. I don't care what's inside. If it's like, is it shiny? No, I go on to the next door. And everybody's kind of like following behind me. It's like, what's in here? What did we miss that he didn't come and look at? And it's so much different than playing like the cleric that I'm playing right now in another game, because I don't have to think about anything. I just walk in. It's like, oh, is it shiny? No, I don't give a fuck. I move on to the next room. And one of the rooms had like a sword on the wall. And I was like, oh, is it decorative or is it functional? And DM's like, no, it says it's functional. And I was like, boop, 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 boom, yoink.
Yeah, I will take this sword.
I will take this. And one of the characters, the sorcerer, is like, what are you doing? You're ransacking these people's house. And without missing a beat, I just look at him and I'm just like, do something.
Oh. Okay.
And he was like, oh. All
right.
Oh, very
that's
nice.
That's how we're going
to
play it.
Actually, I wanted to ask, because you brought up one of your campaigns. Yep. And right now, I believe you're playing an evil character.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm playing a neutral evil cleric in a Forgotten Realms campaign. And I'm neutral evil because, one, I am a drow.
Right, so it leans you more to being evil.
Yeah, Loth has this whole thing with chaos and...
Well, the fact that you're neutral evil is not that far. It's not that bad considering that it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, you could really go off the deep end.
I could. And I told the guys in the group, I'm like, look, I'm not evil because I want to stab you in the middle of the night. Like, I need you to stand between me and the bad guys.
No, see, and that's the thing I wanted to ask. That's why I was leading you to that, of course. Because fellow bear next to us here, Pedro, is actually playing an evil character.
The first evil character I've ever played.
And he's also playing an evil character in 4th edition.
Yeah.
As I believe you're a warlock.
Yeah, I am a Kalashtar warlock.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, that brings up a discussion. Like, it's always, and I've seen it in every other campaign that I've played where there's one evil character and everybody else is generally good. Some are neutral, but generally it's a good campaign, and then there's that one evil character.
The necessary bit of chaos you need to make entertaining. Yeah.
See, that's the thing. It's like, but that's the issue, is that half of RPG players that play this game understand that you will come across, just because somebody's evil, a neutral evil, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're gonna cut your head off,
right?
You know, in the middle of a fight.
Yeah.
It just so happens that if, you know, if they see a bag of coins or stardust or something that they want at the end of a hallway, and they know there's a trap door, just in case, they're going to ask somebody to go in front of them.
Oh, for sure.
And I had trouble with it at first, too, because I had this idea for this, like, a monk who had been sort of, he had his family, and he had this whole monkitude thing going, and then it's like the monkiness
crashed on top of his head.
Yeah. So, well, basically, like, all these cultists came in and wiped out his whole family and all this shit, and he was basically corrupted, and now he follows basically Cthulhu. And that was the whole idea I had. So at some point, it's like, he had this, like, central bit of morality, and then it's been corrupted. So a lot of it had to go along the lines of, like, well, he is evil because he has, like, a practical goal in mind, but the whole idea being that he still has, like, emotions, and he still has certain levels of compassion, but because he has, like, this very strong goal that he has to, you know, try to bring his god back, he has to think, like, okay, how do I get this to happen? I need to work with these people together. And I started reading up on, like, how do you deal with having a very particular type of evil character? Mm-hmm. And it really came down to, like, oh, just because you're evil doesn't mean that you want to, you know, kill the people that you, in fact, you could be absolutely great friends with them. And the logic for my guy is, like, oh, I actually like these guys over time. So when I see my god again, like, I will offer you to my god because I love you so much.
Ooh, great.
Right, 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 right.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know as a player.
No, and I'm saying this to you because the way that I roleplay my characters, everybody at this point already knows basically who my god is, and everybody knows that I play my character so fucking shifty.
Yeah.
So, like,
shifty eyes all the time.
All the fucking time, and with a bad propensity for torture. So, like, I don't feel badly telling you that because you already fucking know. Like, I'm directing, like, any role playing, anybody who's had any tropiness in any sort of fantasy would know already, like, don't fucking trust this guy already.
Right, right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, see, but you telling me this now, me knowing this knowledge, like, I'm obviously character's gonna, would, you know, my character right now more or less understands that you're not, you know, your intentions are not on the side of good.
No,
all the
time. No, not at all.
But a lot of times, players will find out knowledge either by noticing something or somebody tells them out of character or out of the game, and then they bring it into the game as though the character knows what's going on. And then that's when things start messing up because it sucks. Because I don't know if you guys have ever been in that situation where my character doesn't know something, but I found out of character, and somehow I still have to relate. I still have to relay that I don't know what's going on, even though I'm not supposed to go that way because I know what the fuck's going to happen. But my character more than likely wants to go that way.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, how do you balance your outside knowledge with your character knowledge? Are you able to, like, balance that, or do you strictly stay like, listen, whatever I fucking know, my character does not know that, so I'm just gonna fucking go and do whatever I want?
Yeah, I as a player try to disassociate myself with, like, if you guys are in a scene together, I will go somewhere else, or I'll turn around, or I'll flip through the book and start looking at other things for my character, so my attention isn't, like, sitting there going, like, oh, you just killed that little girl? Okay, wait till you come back.
Yeah.
we're going to have words. No, like for me, it's like, oh, you know, I'll hear snippets here and there, and I'll be like, oh, they killed a little girl. And it's like, well, she probably had it coming. As I'm looking for something else, like I'm looking for rules on spell crafting or you know, item crafting and spell casting and things like that. Because in the Adventure League, they don't let you craft magical items. But in the game where I'm playing the cleric, like he said, you are allowed to go, and you know, if you find some plans for magical items, you can make them. And I was like, game time, bitches.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. It's like for instance, and I know I've brought it up before, me and Pedro have seen it, where a rust monster will come into a room, mm-hmm. and we know we've seen it in other campaigns, but our character has never seen it. That didn't stop me from yelling out, "Don't use your swords!"
Yeah.
But you didn't yell that out until, like, you had the patience. You waited until one of our other characters, an archer, shot at the, because he had the priority, and he shot at the rust monster, and immediately the arrow disintegrated. So Kenny wasted no time whatsoever in being like, "Don't fucking do this shit."
But you know, but it's like, it's hard. It is. It's hard because you want to make the game naturally flow, and sometimes knowing that knowledge kind of screws up what's going on, because mm-hmm. you know what this certain thing is, so you won't aim towards it, even though the campaign or the DM wanted you to go that way. And that kind of, it doesn't happen all the time, but you know, like you guys said, it would be easier if you just treat it as, this person doesn't know anything, even though I know I'm going to go into shit, I don't know anything,
yeah.
Just keep going. Yeah. And it's hard, because sometimes people can't, it's hard to go, like, it'll happen without you even knowing type yeah. sometimes.
It's a hard balance as a player, and I got to see it this weekend when we played our Curse of Strahd game. There was a very clear statue of whoever owned the Death House, and the crystal orb in its hand wasn't stone. It was a crystal orb. And I go, that's trapped. Like, clear out to the table. Oh, that's trapped. Don't touch it. But my character didn't know any better. My character has an intelligence 8, so my character...
Oh, your character's stupid as fuck.
Yeah, my character's like, shiny?
And then grab?
And meanders over. Luckily... I don't have the initiative to grab things first.
Oh, that's right, because you guys roll for initiative as yeah. far as who takes what turn, yeah. even outside of combat.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, I never...
Yeah. Actually, but it makes sense, because if you do that, then it's better than everybody yelling at once, "I want to search the room" type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So we stayed in combat initiative. Go ahead.
No, keep going.
No, I mean, right, that can be that yeah. can be edited. So
okay.
you keep going in combat initiative. Okay. Go for
it. So we stayed in combat initiative when we got into the room, and so it was like one of those things where as a player I said that orb is trapped, and everybody kind of like nodded their agreement, as players do. And then you know the bard, which went first, he went over and he's like, "Oh, I inspect it," and I was like, "Here we go,
shit's about to pop off,
game time, boom, great sword in hand." And sure enough, 5 shadows just popped up all around us, and we're like, "Oh, okay, this is where we die."
Very nice.
Yeah. Very nice.
Well, at least it's not Ravenloft, where it doesn't matter what level you're at.
Oh no, this is Ravenloft.
Oh,
Curse of Strahd isn't Ravenloft.
Yeah, that's the Curse of Strahd.
Then I apologize.
Then I'm sorry.
No, yeah, trust me.
And I apologize, because that's the thing. If for our listening audience, if you don't know the Ravenloft
mythos.
The thing about traps is it doesn't matter what level you're at. Mm-mm. There is no DC. If you trigger it, you trigger it.
Yeah, so you trigger. Whatever happens, it's time to go. Happens. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we get a chance to talk to you some about your gaming past. So you actually brought some games with you today. So let's talk about them right now. Let's see what's up first.
Boom.
All right, so the first game that we fucked around with today is something called Sushi Go.
Sushi Go.
Yeah, this one, let us know. Tell us about it a little bit.
That was racist.
no, actually, it would be
Sushi Go.
Yeah,
little more intense.
Sushi Go is a pass and play game, or a play and pass game, which is a simple quick card game. Took us what, like 20 minutes once we knew.
I think it took us like 20 minutes for like 2 full games.
Yeah, yeah. So it's meant to
Pretty
be
fast.
like bam bam bam, like while you're waiting for food or for like your table, things like that.
It's a good it's a good restaurant game.
Yeah.
No, it's actually, the way I see it is, it's one of those games where You just go, oh, it's kind of like a love letter where I got, oh, I got 10, 15 minutes to kill.
Yeah.
Let me just go ahead. And everybody knows, once everybody knows how to play and the strategy it goes with it, it's, that's quick.
Rounds go by super fast.
Rounds go by really quick. And it's really cool because it's a game, like the aspect of the game, it's simple. Once you look at it, the cards are easy to read. Not only that, it's one of those things where it's fun at first, and then towards the end, it's like, I want to kill you.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of backstabbing possible.
Yeah,
with
yeah, we played with the maximum amount of fuckery, which is where we play two rounds passing to the left and then one round to the right.
Just to spread the hate.
Just to spread the hate. Cause,
with sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah, sushi hate. But the one thing I found kind of interesting about it was there is a lot of short, medium, and long-term strategies that you can actually take with it for something that's, you know, really is just very quick. Shuffle, pass out 9 cards, play around real fast. Like, you know, you could definitely get some interesting.
The mechanic of the Maki rolls versus the pudding is what really.
Yeah. One of the mechanics has you, whoever has the most of a certain card at the end of the game gets, I think, like a 6 or 9 point bonus.
Yeah.
And then the loser ends up getting nailed. The person who has the least amount of that type of card gets, like, really gets minus 6.
Including 0. It specifies in the book. It's like, if you have 0, you have none. Yeah. You have the least amount.
Which sucks. That means that if you have at least 1 out, that means everybody else is already at a disadvantage towards the end of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, there's other little things like, you know, like there's also one called Chopsticks, which allows you when you play it, then in the next hand, if you want to, you can bring that back up and play 2 cards instead of 1, which is cool, especially if there's pairs that give you points when you play when you have 2 of the same kind or 3 of the same kind, or when you have 2 different pairs, it gives you like one is wasabi that if you mix it with another roll, it gives you, depending on the points, triple the amount, stuff like that. Like, it's fun. It's easy to understand, and in my opinion, has very high replayability.
Yeah. Like, this is a good, on top of being a good restaurant game, it's a good fucking drunk game.
Yeah.
Like, you get fucking hammered, and you can see people fucking screaming at each other, like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. No, and I like that. I like those games, especially if it's, like you said, it doesn't even have to be a drunk game. Just, I got to wake up. I wake up, I'm like, man, I got time to kill. Let's go ahead and knock this out real quick.
Yeah, and it takes about 1 round to figure it out. Like, I figured out, like, I'm kind of slow when it comes to these kind of things.
Yeah,
and
that
I picked
one
up on
bad round, contest. And then you were like, oh, this is how the game is played?
Okay, now I see.
I brought the Bangkong Pinga party.
Simpang.
Yeah, you got rid of the bread real fucking fast.
And the second game that we tried out is called Takenoko.
Takenoko.
And this one is the opposite. It is a long – this game you can sit
– Yeah, the long-form game.
And play for a while.
Yeah. One of the things that you will notice about all of my board games is that replayability is the highest factor that I look for.
Right.
So living board games like Betrayal at House on the Hill that we talked about while we were playing Takenoko itself – King of Tokyo, Colossal Arena, Love Letter. Like, these are games that you could play them 6-7 times in one sitting and never play the same scenario over again.
Right.
And that's huge. That's huge. That's what the market is looking for. And that's why that's the main factor with the game that I'm designing. So
yeah, tell us more about that.
I'm trying to design a board game along the living board game scenario where it's never the same game twice, where you could play it with 2, 3, or 4 people, and the number of people you play with also increases the difficulty and the amount of objectives you have to clear.
So it's a tile game.
It's a tile-based game, yeah. And basically what it is that each player sets the number of tiles the length of the game is. So 2 players, the game is actually 2 tiles wide. If it's 3 players, it's 3 tiles wide, and so on and so forth. So you kind of... The more players you have, the more you distance yourself from your objective. But at the same time, it's like there's more on the playing field for you to deal with. So it becomes, for me, it becomes much more fun.
It sounds like it's very modular. Like, you're able to adjust it to how much time you have, to how many people that you're
exactly,
got with you.
Exactly, which is a huge thing. And it's also a family game, because it's one of those things where it's like, if you have 2 or 3 kids, you know, a single parent can sit there with their 2 kids and be like, all right, let's play this game. Knock it out real quick, and then, you know, go to bed or wash your face or fucking, you know.
Well, watch Frozen for the 90th
time. Whatever kids do these days.
Well, let me go ahead and ask you then, and tell me about what is the game. Like, tell me What is the description of the game and what is the objective?
The game is called tentatively, because I haven't really decided on the title yet, but I call it Battle for the Bedroom. And
very sexy title.
Yeah. Yeah. It has nothing to do with sexiness.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be a Barnes & Noble.
But it's a family game where you play a group of teddy bears protecting the sleepover kids from the monsters in the closet. And that's why I say when you play with more players, you increase the objective because you create a distance between the bed and the closet. So there's more time for fuckery to happen, where like more monsters come out, more tiles become dark so that there's no night lights in there.
It sounds almost like Plants vs. Zombies, where like you got lanes and shit. Is that
there's no real lanes. It's just that there are the tiles, and the tiles create the bedroom. So not only do you have the length of the game based on the number of players, but you also have the length determines how many tiles you're playing with in total. And I think it's 2x3 or 2x4 for a two-player game, and then 3x4, and then 4x4. So it becomes like a huge, huge game. And there's objectives. You know, there's variants of the game already built in where you can play, where you have to kill or destroy all the monsters in the room before you win. You have to find the key to the closet so you can lock it. There's variants built in where it's not ever going to be the oh, we got to go stop the closet monsters. It's like, oh, this time let's try playing Supremacy, where it's like, let's clear the room so we can win.
Right.
Okay. You well, know? How do you lose in the game?
You lose in the game if the monsters get to the bed, obviously, and the kids wake up. You lose if the kids wake. You lose, period, if the kids wake up. So the monsters create noises. They turn the tiles against the teddy bears. So like if there's one set of tiles that has a video game console on it, and if one of the monsters gets to it, they turn it on and they create noise. So it's like, you know, all the flashing lights, the beeps and boops. And as a teddy bear, you have to now prioritize. Like, do you go and turn off the sound, because every round it creates what's called tossing, what I call the mechanic of tossing and turning, where every turn starts with rolling to see if the kids wake up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the tossing and turning meter is low, you don't have to worry about it. You know, it's like, oh, it's impossible for them to wake up. It's happened. It's like...
So it's almost like the madness in Betrayal and House on the
mm-hmm.
Hill.
Okay. Yeah, the haunt roll. Yeah, I took pieces of all the games that I know work, that I think are fantastic mechanics. Because my playwriting professor says, if you're going to steal big.
Yeah.
So I was like,
go big or go home.
These mechanics really work. I'm going to take these.
How can I incorporate this mechanic?
How can I not make it look like it's theirs?
Yeah. But let me ask you, what stage of it are you playtesting right now?
I'm playtesting by myself, which sounds a lot kinkier than it actually is.
With a battle in the bedroom. Ooh. Oh yeah, myself.
It's a solo battle. Which basically just means that I'm playing with cardboard cutouts of what I think the thing is going to feel like and run like. I'm playing with the mechanic of the dice because, you know, people have asked for a much more of a chance mechanic.
Because before it was all but so with the chance, you're just strictly on the die or also on the tile itself as well?
The tiles affect the chance. And there's cards also that are playing with. I have a thing called the toy chest, which is basically if you're on the bed, you can rummage under the bed for something and you get to draw. Right now you get to draw three cards and you pick one and the rest get discarded. And, you know, some teddy bears get better rummaging than others. So there's one teddy bear that gets to draw, I think, four and pick one.
Yeah, and like all the bears have different
abilities.
Like, yeah. I think I spoke with you about this before where you said, one, you were thinking of a possibility of a huge bear.
Yeah, that he doesn't move at all.
That he doesn't move unless
he has to be
assisted.
Pulled. Yeah, he has to be pulled by other bears.
Oh, that's it. So a lot of the mechanics of replayability is just changing which character you
yeah.
play as.
Yeah,
okay.
So the more aspects you have that are variable with board games, for me, the more you want to play the game, in my opinion, because there's so many things that you can switch out, whereas in Sushi Go, we're always passing to the left, and then we're playing one round to the right. In Takenoko, it's like the teddy bear, the panda, and the farmer can only move in straight lines. It's like there are certain fences that keep you wrangled.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you space out those fences, the better a game I feel you're going to create, because there's so much room to roam about. It's like it's the sandbox model. It's like the more you give somebody to play around with, the less he's going to go looking for where those walls are.
Right.
You know?
Right. What you're trying to do is get a balance on as far as you wanting to explore the game, but make sure you stick to the actual objective instead of it.
Yeah.
It's just like the opposite of an open world game on your console. You're like, nah, I don't got to do that right now. I'm just going to run around for a while.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things, too, with the objectives. It's like, do you want to go for the key? If you're going to go for the closet key, then you're going to go for the exploratory route. You're going to play a longer game. You're going to want to flip over tiles. If you're going to go for the straight up just mollywop scenario, then you're just going to go beeline for the closet and then create a fortification at the closet so you stop monsters from spawning. And the thing too that brings the mechanic of surprise is that you never know what monsters are coming out, because you always shuffle the deck. And there's if you've never played Shadows over Camelot, that's something that taught me that you can have a board game that is really mean to you, but really satisfying at the same time.
Right.
Right.
Like Shadows over Camelot, we've played with a traitor twice. And they tell you, you know, don't play with a traitor unless you've won the game consistently, like 75% of the time. But we're idiots. We don't pay attention to the rules. Out of the 17 or 18, like less than 24 times that I've played this game, I've won twice.
Wow.
Damn.
That game is like, did you want to have fun? Earn it.
It kind of reminds me of a game that does that to me a lot is Legendary, Marvel's Legendary.
Oh yeah,
that's a game that's trying to beat you. It's not everybody's against themselves. It's like, help! I need help from everybody to beat this fucking game.
Yeah, depending on what boss you get to, like which boss you pick, it's like, oh, this was a mistake. We are in Sparta.
Well, let me ask you, Pedro, then, well, as we're talking about games, what in terms of tabletop or even card, what do you prefer? Do you prefer the short game? Do you like playing the long game a lot, like long form?
See, now, typically I'd like the shorter form, but that's only because I have less experience with, like, the longer form games. Like, the first time I played Betrayal,
mm-hmm.
that was sort of like, oh, this is how you make those longer games work. And I wouldn't even really consider stuff like Ticket to Ride or Carcassonne or any of those like real classic board games. I don't really consider those long. Those are more like medium length.
Yeah.
But I played Betrayal and then I played Mouse Guard.
Oh.
And I really, really liked both of those have like very strong innate storytelling in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I'd never experienced in a board game before, because board games have always been very static and very like kind of linear experiences. Like I know the line of how this is going to work out, but both of those had interesting flexibility with how you played them and how you experience them. And a lot of times, like, you really aren't going to get a lot of the same experiences out of them when you play them multiple times. So I would say that I'm transitioning now more into somebody who likes those longer experiences and specifically have thick stories that you can tell. The things that I really enjoy from, like, playing tabletop role-playing, you know, in a board game format.
There's games like Zombicide I think you're going to like that have – there are games now that range from – the mid-range into the long form. And Zombicide is one of those games that does it really fantastically well, because it is one of those games where you can – there's the map size that determines the size of the game. The number of players determines the size of the game. The characters you choose determines, like, where the game goes. And so that kind of game is really the backbone of where I am as a designer. It's like, how many variables can I throw at you without making you feel inundated?
Feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you want to be able to give them a range of play without them feeling like this is too much at the same time.
Yeah.
No, and that's that's the balance that every game, I think, is looking for at one point or another.
Mm-hmm. So now that we played these games and you told us about your game, if anybody wanted to follow you online, where would we be able to find you?
I have an Instagram, will.cabrera.poetry, because
you do poetry.
You
yes.
are a writer.
Yes. I'm a writer first and a designer second. There's also Will Cabrera Poetry on Tumblr, which I haven't done in a while. I got really excited and then I stopped.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us this
no,
evening
of course.
And
thank
bringing
you guys
the games
for having me.
And, oh yeah.
Oh no, we enjoyed it and thank you so much. You know it. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? What we might have him back again to.
Yeah, we'll have you back for some more board games in the future.
Or not even
yeah,
maybe sure. even to play test your game. Who knows?
Oh, that'd yeah. be awesome.
You would
yeah.
have
yeah.
two actual bears.
Yeah.
Play
oh, yeah,
in
yeah,
your
yeah.
game.
Three bears running.
When we when you get that, let us know, and we'll pop yeah. it back up on live here.
For sure,
oh,
for sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Oh, you can this is actually how we close out the
show. This is how we close out the show.
We start off with bombast, and then we get really sexy.
Okay.
It isn't the end until I feel the hairs on my mustache on top of the mic.
right.
Until it starts shocking you a little bit.
I'm trying that.
Like it tickles or prickles.
I want the tickles on my prickles.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Crit or Die, Bears Love Gaming.
Crit or Die, Bears Love Gaming.
All day, every day.